When I was working as a chaplain in a hospital a few years back, I encountered a newly admitted patient. He had been doing kidney dialysis for several years, and because of recent health complications, he found himself in intensive care. This man's request was to talk to a priest because he wanted to know how he could, in his last days, receive the Eucharist. Now, 50 years earlier, his wife had divorced him, and having known the church's position on divorce, he refrained from presenting himself at communion. Throughout those 50 years, he drifted in and out of the church, but never ever received communion. Naturally, I wasn't yet a priest, and to be honest, I was not confident in my knowledge of canon law at this point in my education and formation. But as he revealed more and more of his story to me, I just couldn't believe that he was restricted from receiving communion. And not wanting to raise his hopes falsely, I went back to my office and called a local Jesuit priest and described the situation to him. The Jesuit concurred with me, and he agreed to come to the hospital to hear this man's confession so that he could finally receive communion. On the day that the priest arrived, I met him at the front door, escorted him to the patient's room, and then left them alone. And about an hour later, the patient called me to come for a visit. At first, I didn't quite recognize the man in the bed. It was the same man, to be certain, and yet, at the same time, it wasn't. He had a peace on his face that revealed the grace that was given to him. Of course, he was delighted that he could receive the sacrament after a 50-year absence. But it was far more than that. The next day, I brought him a second communion and spoke with him at length. And I can honestly say that I was encountering a different person than the one that I had met days earlier. It was a beautiful sight and one that I will not easily forget. The power of the Eucharist to affect lives is indeed awesome and life-changing. But the reason I recounted this story was not to extol the efficacy of the sacrament. Most of us know that already. But rather, I'd like to talk about the misunderstandings that we can all have in the church. Now, even though this man hadn't received the Eucharist in 50 years, it needn't have been that way at all. And while there are some situations where someone might have to refrain from receiving communion, divorce is not one of them. Shocking, you might say. Some of us take what we might hear as church law, but fail to actually research what that law might be, if it even exists. To be certain, what we read in the press or see in popular media doesn't always have any resemblance to actual church teachings. The Venerable Bishop Fulton Sheen once stated, "There are not more than 100 people in the world who truly hate the Catholic Church, but there are millions who hate what they perceive to be the Catholic Church." In this case, a man felt he was in mortal sin because he had gotten a divorce. Someone even told him so. And because of this, he needlessly excused himself from receiving the sacrament. Now, in the first reading, Moses exclaims to the people, "Here are the statutes and ordinances I am teaching you to observe, that you may live and may enter in and take possession of the land which the Lord, the God of your ancestors, is giving you." Now, some of you might be tempted to say, "Well, that's the Old Testament. It doesn't really apply to us now." And that appears to be true sometimes. Much of the Old Testament seems to be littered with stories of intrigue, deception, violence, war, and infidelity. Not at all good qualities. But Jesus also said that he was here to fulfill the law, but not abolish it. What exactly does he mean here? Well, Jesus uses the Old Testament as a teaching tool, much in the same way that he uses parables in the New Testament. In other words, there is something to be learned. What we really need here, like in all things, is a context. God freed the Israelites from the slavery of Egypt through a series of fantastic miracles. You've all seen the Ten Commandments. They knew that God had freed them, and that they were not merely recipients of good luck. Yet when they followed Moses into the desert, they made a golden calf to worship and pay homage. A terrible offense indeed. Now, if you were God, would you have viewed this as gratitude on their part? I don't think so. God, in his mercy, gave them the Ten Commandments, and then committed them to wander 40 years in the desert, not simply as a punishment, but also as a way to teach them. During this time, Moses codified their moral and social laws. These were incredibly important for a people that had no real moral compass. Morally, they were at an infantile stage, going on adolescence. When Jesus makes his appearance some 15 centuries later, he takes the Jewish people who are at their adolescent stage and gives them new laws. So when we say that the laws were not abolished, we're not talking about the actual rules and regulations. We're talking about the internal things that make us behave according to those laws. But here, we need an example. When we tell our young children that they need to clean their room, we have to teach them by breaking it all down. They'll, of course, moan and groan as if you've taken all of the fun out of their lives. And while you do it because you do like to have a little bit of order in your household, what you're really doing is teaching them how to take responsibility for their surroundings. At first, we need to be very ordered and very specific. You start with this, then you do that, then you do that. We tell them that they need to put their dirty clothes in the hamper, fold up their clean clothes, and put them in the drawers. Toys go into their bins, and garbage into their receptacles, and amongst many other things. Later, when they're teenagers, hopefully you do not need to go over with them line by line what it takes to clean up their room. They simply acknowledge, not without some resistance, of course, that the room needs to be cleaned and they ought to be going about their tasks by breaking it down into their own manageable units, even ones that you've never taught them. In other words, you've started with the basics when they were young and immature, but as they grew older, you merely encapsulated the command, clean your room. And then there's an understanding of what needs to be done. The specifics are left to them, not you. At least that's the theory. There are times of disconnect and complaint, but that has more to do with laziness than understanding. For in fact, the teen knows the rules and they know that they're being held accountable. It's an internal issue, not an external issue. As I mentioned earlier, with the appearance of Jesus, the Israelites moved from moral childhood to moral adolescence. Jesus criticizes the Pharisees for going over the details when, in fact, the people should have been mature enough to know what the rules were. When Jesus says, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you," he doesn't need to enumerate a long list of do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that. in order for people to act appropriately. The Pharisees, of course, are concentrating on the minute little details that are asked of a child, and Jesus is asking them to act like adults. In today's gospel, it was important for the disciples to wash before eating, as the Pharisees pointed out. But Jesus was much more interested in their spiritual preparation than their physical preparation. Does the physical aspect have a part to play? Absolutely. But the goal was, in fact, just preparation. Our sensibilities tells us that this is that classic tension between those who subscribe to the letter of the law and those who subscribe to the spirit of the law. And at both ends of this spectrum, there are abuses. The letter of the law people tend to miss the point of the law entirely. And the spirit of the law people tend to use it to justify doing whatever they want. And this is where the church and its role is important. The church has, in fact, compiled 2,000 years of thought and argument to virtually every moral issue spanning from philosophical to the theological perspectives. The trouble with our modern times is that, like the early Israelites, we tend to be ignorant of the rules or to reject them outright. I remember several years back, a woman telling me that she used to be Catholic, but then she got over that Catholic guilt. In reality, she simply no longer wanted to follow anyone's rules but her own. While she might have been temporarily happy, she couldn't have been truly happy, because we are never truly happy unless we are happy in God. She could not abide by the rules, and thus she had no difficulty rationalizing away her sin, whatever that sin might have been. She only distanced herself from God. So if we have difficulties with a particular teaching of the church, we cannot remain ignorant about it. Or worse, we cannot simply disobey it. Our theology tells us that breaking a rule is always wrong, though our culpability can be reduced by mitigating circumstances. We need to seek out what that truth really is. Doing so not only brings us wisdom, but it also brings us closer to God. Not knowing the truth could trick us into not receiving the grace that God wants for us, as my hospital friend found out. But there is a graver situation. Sometimes we intentionally disobey one or more of the church's teachings because we don't like them. They're inconvenient. They're difficult. And we are free to do that. That's what our free will gives us. But then we should not present ourselves for communion, because it not only profanes the sacrament, but it may and probably will cancel the grace that comes with it. Clearly, we don't want any of that for us. Do not forget that we can still come forward at communion for a blessing. But more importantly, we should reconcile ourselves to the teaching, learn more about it, and seek the heavenly kingdom. Father Jerome and I, and Father David, as well as the entire religious education team, are here to help you and your family learn about the teachings of the church. If you don't ask questions, then you won't get any answers. And without answers, we go nowhere, or worse. It is not easy, but then again, we know from experience that the best things are never easy.